Thank you so much. I'm Paige. I'm an alcoholic. It is early, but I'm glad to be here. And like, it's early for Alberta time. Also, I want to thank Hammer. He did a great job introducing the meeting. And so here's the thing. We started with some prayers. We started with some readings. But how I'm going to do this study or workshop or unhinged ADHD around the book is going to be a little like how I work with my sponsees. And whenever I sit down with a sponsee, what I always start with is, would you like to pray? Would you like me to pray? I don't mind either way. So what I'll ask is, would you like to pray? Would you like me to pray? I don't mind either way. I have a feeling I'm praying. All right, I'm just going to kick it off with a prayer. God, I want to thank you for bringing us here together today. I ask that we bring our hearts and minds to this present moment and our hearts and minds to you. I pray that we would be aware of your presence with us, that we would know that you're with us and you would guide us and lead us through this book. Help us to see that which we need to see. Help us to know that which we need to know. Help us to have a deep and profound experience of you, not just so that we may experience victory over alcohol, but so we may help others who do not know there is a way out. Thank you, God. Hi. All right. So let's just bounce around the big book, shall we? I realize not everyone brought their big book, but if you have a book to hand, also there's two. I'm probably not supposed to hand out those two. Those look like they're for sale. But there's two up at the front, so yeah. Oh, there's a whole bunch. Yeah, so if you don't have a book, grab your book. Oh, awesome. Grab them. And here's the thing, if you don't have a book to hand, I'm not going to say turn to a page and then not read it. So I will also read it, you know? Get your big books. Big books here.
Lollipops.
Oh, is there candy? I'm just kidding. All right. We've unleashed chaos.
And you're just getting started.
And I'm just getting started.
That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is
all about. All righty. So let's open up our books and let's turn to page 44. Because I got to know whether or not I'm an alcoholic. Because I don't know if you guys have been leafing around through those little handouts that I brought. So I brought handouts. There's stickers along with the snacks in the back. But here's the thing, if you see some of those handouts, some of those things, there's some directions about steps and spiritual actions. And I don't know about you guys, but when I got here, I wasn't super keen on doing those. I didn't look at those steps on the wall and think, boy, searching in fearless moral inventory, I was just about to do that. Oh, an amends. Oh, a rigorous process of amends, even to my ex. Yeah, I'm gonna do that. Prayer and meditation? No, I'm not going to throw in an or and decide what I want to do. No, I'll do all of that. Yeah, that was not my experience. So I need to understand what is wrong with me. And if I do not know whether I'm an alcoholic or not, or if I'm working with a sponsee and they don't know whether they are an alcoholic or not, the best place to take them is page 44. So let's pop over to page 44 right now. We're going to rock and roll in the first paragraph. And I'll read it for those that don't have a book with you. We're in the chapter We Agnostics, which is kicking off step two, which is a complete ADHD way to start a study, but here we are. It says, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. Gosh, I hope so, because there's like 44 plus some Roman numerals. Like, I hope we learned a thing or two. It says, we hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. So this is the distinction. It is simple as this. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or I want you to know I was an and, but or. If when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. And so what are those two? I can take those statements and I can turn them into questions. The first question is, what happens when I honestly want to? Do I find that I cannot quit entirely? When I honestly want to, when I came to in the morning. Actually, we'll do a show of hands. Anyone here ever said, that's it, I'm never going to drink again? Oh, we got a pretty close to full house on that one, right? And now I want another show of hands. No pressure, though. This is all the participation is completely optional. It's not mandatory. Anyone here ever said, that's it, I'm absolutely never going to drink again and then drink again? That is what that question is asking. When I honestly wanted to, when I said, that's it, I never want to do this again, did I pick up the drink? And when we talk about that, what we're talking about is what is called our mental obsession. And what we're talking about there is a lack of choice. See, here's the thing. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know what's wrong with me. And I don't know that I do not have the ability to choose whether I will drink or not. And that seems insane because I can choose everything else in my life. But I have lost the power to choose whether I will drink or not. Now, we're going to get into that. And it says, or. Well, we'll find out if we got a couple of hands in this room. But it says, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount we take. Anyone here drink and find they don't have a whole lot of control? Anyone here go out for 3 drinks and then end up drinking for, I don't know, 3 days or, yeah? Anyone here ever come to with wet pants? Not as many hands. Look at you classy drinkers, right? So if I experience a lack of control, and that's what we're talking about is our physical allergy. It's something that non-alcoholics do not experience. But if I take that drink and that drink takes me, and I experience that thing where I need more, and the more that I drink, the more that I have to drink, I drink and I get thirstier. That makes me an alcoholic. Lack of control and lack of choice. That's it. So if you came to this today, good for you, it was early. But if you came to this today and you were not sure whether or not you had alcoholism, it is simple as that. All my andas, all my yeah buts and my ors, all the things that I come to, I didn't do this yet. I didn't have a DUI yet, or I only had 3 DUIs. All of that I can throw out to the side. Do I have a lack of control and do I have a lack of choice? That is what makes me an alcoholic. And it's probably, I mean, high probability, because I mean, we got 2 symptoms. Those are the 2. It says, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness, which only a spiritual experience will conquer. I don't know about you guys, but when I got here, that was not good news. I was not like, oh boy, a spiritual experience. Because I got sober young. And some of you are like, what are you, 12? I mean, emotionally, right? But when I got here young. And I saw that God word, and I'm like, ooh, that is not cool. And I am real attached to this idea of being cool. Now, some of you that know me know that I've absolutely never been cool in my life, ever, ever. Like my peak coolness, I was pissing my pants behind a dumpster smoking crack with a gentleman I just met. And you might be like, Paige, why are you calling him a gentleman? Well, I just met the guy. I shouldn't pass judgment. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so, I had to know what was wrong with me. I had to understand the hopelessness of my alcoholic dilemma before I was ever willing to accept the hope that was on offer, before I was ever willing to get over myself. So let's pop over to page bottom of page 25, because I feel like it. At very bottom of page 25. This is where the ADHD that I absolutely definitely don't have is going to take over. Bottom of page 25. It says, if you are seriously alcoholic as we were, man, I hope not. I don't know about you, but when I got here, I'm like, I hope I'm not as bad as you. I hope I have little baby alcoholism or like alcoholism light, diet alcoholism. That's what I was hoping. You know what I mean? Like it's bad, but it's not like all 12 steps bad. Like, it's not that bad, right? So we got to find out, is it that bad? It says, if you are seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. That's a bummer. I was kind of hoping for one of those. That sounds lovely. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And I don't know about you, but for me, I was, how did they know? How did they know I was in a position where I could not do life anymore? How did they know? And if we had passed into a region from which there is no return through human aid, we had 2 alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. And the other, to accept spiritual help. And I want you to know, only for somebody like me is that a tough choice. Now, if we were to hang out in front of the Tim Hortons, you know what I mean? And asking people when they come in, hey, would you want to die an alcoholic death with all the things that entails, or would you prefer to, I don't know, maybe just write some inventory, share it with another human being, do a 6 and 7, rock out some amends, clean that stuff up, live a life of prayer, meditation, and service? Are you in for that? I want you to know they'd say yes. But I want you to know, when those options were presented to me, I was a little like, how much of an alcoholic death are we talking about? Like, how bad? Like, how, with my very, very minimal diet alcoholism, is it going to be like a little minimal alcoholic death? You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to just skirt through all of that. And so I need to know whether I've passed into the region where I passed human aid, beyond human aid. And I want to give you a little bit of a spoiler. It's lack of control, lack of choice. But if you don't believe me, let's go to the bottom of page 24. It should be easy to find. We're on page 24 and 25. It says, when this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he's probably placed himself beyond human aid. And unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. So bottom of page 24, this sort of thinking being fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies. So I gotta figure out what the heck is these alcoholic tendencies? Because I'm hoping I got some other tendencies. You know what I mean? Maybe some chicken tendencies. Those are chicken tenders. I don't know. Who invited me? It's a group conscious decision. You'll have to write inventory in the whole committee. So let's find out what is the one symptom all alcoholics have in common. We're going to rock and roll back to the Roman numerals. I told you we were going to bounce around. I am so sorry, guys. Rock and roll triple X, page XXX in the doctor's opinion. We're going to see what is the symptom that each and every alcoholic has in common. I'm just waiting until I hear the pages stop rustling where I know I can go. Because I also know that, like, my book is, like, a little worn out, and so, like, it'll just open to some of these pages, but we got to rustle through. So what we're looking at is we got those five different types of drinkers. And right below that, it says all these and many others have but one symptom in common. It says, and so this is the one symptom that each and every alcoholic has in common. It's almost the bottom of the paragraph. Bottom of the page. It says, all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. So what we're talking about is an allergy. When I got here, I heard that, like, basically, I'm just telling you all the judgments that I had when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, how open-minded I was. But when I got here, I heard allergy. I'm like, what the heck are you talking about, right? An allergy. What we're talking about, an allergy is very simply nothing more, nothing less than an abnormal physical reaction. A physical reaction that happens within me that does not happen in the vast majority of the population. Now, I have some little handouts. And I got props and stuff. So I got a little handout, and it's one of the cards. And it's got, it's not the history one. Yeah, it's that one. So it's the one that's got green on one side and like some pink and pastel colors on the other. I am almost never this well prepared for anything that I do in my life that I can be like, please refer to the handout. If you know me, you know the power of God is clearly working in this. Yeah, it's that handout. Yeah. Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to look at that pink and pastel side. See, when we're talking about an allergy, what we're talking about is an abnormal physical reaction. Just a reaction that happens at a physical level that does not happen to other people, the vast majority of the population. Oh, if you didn't get one of those, there's some in the front where the uncomfortable chairs are, where you people had the cushy chairs in the back. Yeah, grab your cushy chair handouts. Anywho. And so what we talk about, for those that we're speaking about how Joe and Charlie kind of helped inspire this meeting and helped inspire some of Alcoholics Anonymous here in Cambridge. If you're familiar with Joe and Charlie, you probably would have heard of something called strawberry milk alcohol. So we're going to rock and roll with some strawberry milk alcohol, which sounds absolutely delicious or disgusting. You know what I mean? Like, ooh, strawberry milk alcohol? What is this, right? So if I'm allergic to strawberries, that's an abnormal reaction. 9 out of 10 people in the world, they can have strawberries. They can have strawberries, no problem. 1 out of 10, we'll say, 1 out of 10, they eat strawberries and they develop this abnormal reaction that does not happen to the vast majority of the population. And for somebody who is allergic to strawberries, their allergy to strawberries manifests itself as a rash or hives, right? And is it safe to say, now maybe you guys might have different opinions, but is it safe to say that a rash or hives, negative reaction, right? I don't want hives. That does not feel good. It's itchy and uncomfy. I do not want, right? And it's safe to say that the more, if I'm allergic to strawberries, the more strawberries I eat, the bigger, the more of a rash that I'm going to get. Like if I have a little nibble of a strawberry, I'm going to get a little bit of a hive here and there. But if I eat a whole bushel of strawberries, if I go hard, I go on a strawberry bender. You know what I mean? I am going to be like a red balloon. You know what I mean? So the more strawberries that I eat, the stronger the reaction that I have. And is it safe to say if I'm allergic to strawberries, my allergy to strawberries only manifests itself once I eat strawberries? Doesn't happen when I see that strawberries are on sale at Co-op or Save on Foods. You know what I mean? It doesn't happen if I'm hanging out with the kiddos and they're watching Strawberry Shortcake. Doesn't happen. Doesn't happen if I'm hanging out with you guys and there's some strawberries out back and you guys are eating them and it's great. Nothing happens. It only happens when I ingest the strawberries. And then we look at a lactose allergy, which is not the best one. Because if anyone here has a lactose allergy, I absolutely know you're sneaking ice cream and regretting it. So it's not the best metaphor. But if I was allergic to milk, nine out of 10 people in the world, 9 out of 10, we can have milk, no problem. I can have cheese, it's delightful, it's wonderful, I can have it, no problem, nothing happens. Maybe some feelings feel better, but you know, cheese is great. But I have lactose, nothing happens. There's no reaction. But if I was allergic, what would happen is my allergy to cheese, to milk, it would manifest itself in the phenomenon of an upset stomach, to be polite, because it's like 10 in the morning, you know what I mean? So my allergy to strawberries, or my allergy to milk would manifest itself in the upset stomach. And is it safe to say I put a little bit of creamer in my coffee, get a little bit of a tummy rumbling, right? Is it safe to say if I drink a whole 2 liters of milk, I am going to have a reaction, you know what I mean? The stronger the allergic reaction is going to be. And is it safe to say that I don't get an upset stomach when I'm not drinking milk? I don't get an upset stomach if I see a Cheerios commercial and they're pouring the milk slowly into the bowl. Nothing happens. It only happens when I ingest the milk. And so when we talk about alcoholics, an alcoholic, what I have is an abnormal physical reaction to alcohol. 9 people out of 10, they drink and nothing happens. Nothing happens to them, nothing happens for them. They take a drink and nothing. They enjoy their meal because they're going to eat while they drink because they don't know that that's going to come up later at 3 a.m. because that doesn't happen to them. You know what I'm saying? Nothing. They have a drink and they enjoy it. They might get a little tipsy and then go to bed. You know what I mean? Like I don't. I don't even know what I mean. I do not relate to that sort of drinking. But nothing happens to them. But what happens to me as an alcoholic is I take a drink. And I always talk about this. The first thing that's abnormal about what happens to me when I take a drink is I experience this. Peace. Ease. Comfort. Serenity. See, I get a solution for life. You know those non-alcoholics? They don't get that, right? They don't. Now, what also happens that is abnormal, that does not happen to the majority of the population, is I develop what is known as the phenomenon of craving. There is something inside of me that tells me more. And just like with strawberries and just like with milk, the more of the allergic allergen that I put into my system, the stronger the reaction. So the more that I drink, the stronger that more gets. And I'm overshooting the mark. I'm missing the mark. I'm drinking myself into consequences. I'm doing things that I shouldn't do. I'm playing the bottom beer roulette that we were talking about yesterday. You know what I mean? I'm doing these things because I can't control the amount that I take. And the more that I drink, the louder that more gets. And that allergy, that allergic reaction does not kick off in me. If Budweiser's on sale and they're doing the Super Bowl commercial with the beer and the thing, that doesn't kick off. I'm from Calgary. We have Stampede. It's where people dress as cowboys and get drunk for about 16 days. When Stampede happens, nothing happens, right? Nothing happens. The physical allergy, the phenomenon of craving only happens once I ingest alcohol into my system. Now, if I'm hanging out at Stampede, which I'll let you know most Calgarians don't, because we know, but if I'm hanging out at Stampede and people are getting drunk in their cowboy hats, and I start getting a thought, or I start getting a feeling like I'd like some ease and comfort, I'd like a drink, what's kicking off in me is the mental obsession. The physical allergy only happens once I've ingested that. Does that make sense? Does anyone, I'm gonna just throw it out. Does anyone have any questions? I mean, like, probably pertinent, not like life questions. Like, where did the wasp go? You know, I don't have the answer to that. Not all right. That sounds like an allergy? Yeah. All right, let's rock and roll. Let's go back very, very quickly to page 24. Because what we gotta talk about is, so that is our lack of control. We got to talk about our lack of choice. So very bottom paragraph, we already read this, so that's why I'm just going to keep on nattering about it. It talks about when this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies. So to be an individual with alcoholic tendencies is to have the physical allergy. That is something each and every alcoholic has in common. And what the thinking that we're talking about, let's go to the top of page 24. We're going to look at the italics or the squiggly writing. It says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. I do not have the ability to choose whether I would drink or not. You see, any other allergy, I would just avoid it. You'll notice that we don't have Strawberries Anonymous. People who are allergic to peanuts do not need to get a peanut sponsor. You know what I mean? Nobody who has the shellfish thing, you know, they don't need to, like, really. Listen, I was thinking about going into a Red Lobster. I'm gonna call someone. You know, they don't relate to this, right? And see, if that was just my problem, right, that I can't control the amount I drink, I stop drinking, I don't got a problem. But the problem is, as an alcoholic, I have this thought that takes me back time and time again to that first drink. And as a result of that, I cannot control the amount I take. So I have lost the ability to choose whether I drink or not, because I would never choose to do what I did to myself. I would never choose to destroy my family. I would never choose to burn it to the ground again and again and again. I would never choose to break the hearts that I broke. I would never choose to do the things, degrade myself in the ways that I did. I would never choose that, and I don't think you guys did either. I think I am beyond the power of choice. And it says our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. See, I heard some stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous that makes sense if you're not an alcoholic. I would hear things like, play the tape to the end. And I would think, okay, that's it. I'm going to play the tape to the end. Just going to think about the consequences. I don't know if you caught that. It's telling me I can't. It's telling me that is, there are times when I can. There are times when I'm able to think, man, I don't want to drink. I don't want to burn it down. I don't want to do this again. And that has sufficient force. But you see, for an alcoholic of my type, I need something that is 100% effective. It's a little like birth control or a parachute. You know what? Or a fire extinguisher? It's the times that don't work that matter. You know what I'm saying? I need something that is going to work with 100% effectiveness. I need something that works. And see what happens when I'm as sober as I am today, I get this thought. And that thought tells me in a little voice, I'm sure you have, actually, I'm going to throw it out. We'll do a show of hands because audience participation. Woo! There's going to be like heavy participation later. I mean, it's optional. I'm not going to make anyone do anything. I'm not your sponsor, unless I am, in which case, yes. I saw the, oh no. Anyone out here, as sober as they are today, anyone here ever get a thought? This time will be different? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Anyone here get a nobody will ever know? Sneak it. No, anyone get a no one will ever know when I'm living in a sober living environment? Yeah. Yeah. They knew. They knew real quick, right? I got to get it out of my system. Anyone want to get it out of their system? Anyone want to have a real good surrender? You know, I got to get big bender, big surrender. You know what I mean? It rhymes. How can it be wrong, right? Yeah. Anyone here have the self-awareness that I had, which is like, I am being miserable to everyone in my life. I'm going to take a drink or two. I'll be nicer to everyone. Take the edge off. Anyone here ever, you went through what I went through, you'd have to drink too? Oh, we went through some stuff. Look at that, right? Anyone here ever said, F it, I'm going to kill myself anyways? Yeah. Yeah. That's me. That's me. And it talks, and so we're going to stay on page 24, which is like me being nice because I could bounce around real hard, but we're going to try to focus. It says the almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they're hazy. I've had some hazy thoughts right before I took that first drink. And readily supplanted, that just means replaced with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is the complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on the hot stove. This time will be different. Nobody will ever know. You see, the stove, and oh, did anyone do a geographic? There's no drunks in Ontario. I'll be fine out here. You know what I mean? Turns out there might be some drunks in Ontario, right? What's that? Oh, also Alberta, yeah. Yeah. That's, if you're thinking of coming out west to avoid the alcoholism, I want you to know the alcoholism is not out here. It's in here. That's where that lives. So I got some news. I'm just as alcoholic in Calgary as I am in Cambridge, as I am in Lethbridge, living in a windy crack house, you know, like a lady. I mean, some of you are like real. See, that's the thing. We got to talk about symptoms. We can't talk about consequences. Some of you are like, I would never live in a crack house in Lethbridge. Crack house in Kitchener, different story, you know. Just less windy. Okay, that's a very specific Alberta joke, and I'm surprised it landed. So thank you. So. It says the alcoholic may say to himself, and actually, if you're writing in your big book today, or if you're writing in the vision for you handed out big books today, I'm not going to tell you what to do or not to. Yeah. You can make a little note in your book to see page 84. And we're going to do that in just a second. Because one of the things is in this book, we always want to go from hopeless to hope. It hammers down the hopelessness of the alcoholic dilemma. We're not going to go to page 84 yet. We're going to finish reading, but then we're going to pop over to page 84. It says, the alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time, so here's how. The stove was hot in Calgary, it won't be hot here. The stove was an electric stove, this is a gas stove, it won't be hot. You know, if you went through what I went through, you'd have to touch that stove too. I'm just gonna touch it for a second. You know, I haven't touched it in 3 months, so it'll be different this time, right? And I touch that hot stove. And it says, or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often have some of us began to drink in this nonchalant way? And after the third or fourth pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, for God's sakes, how did I ever get started again? Or if you're drunk like me, what's the use anyhow? I'm in for a penny, I'm in for a pound. I might as well burn it to the ground, right? And that's the physical allergy kicking in, right? I get that ease and comfort and off I go. And so we're gonna full on jump around. Let's go to page 84, because we're going to go to some hope, because this is what we're after. So we're in the step 10 promises, and I'm popping us over here now in case I run out of time and we don't ever get here in this, you know, study workshop, what have you. Let's go to the very bottom paragraph of page 84. It's right below love and tolerance of others is our code. And I want to point out love and tolerance of others is our code in the rooms. Love and tolerance of others is our code with our family. Love and tolerance of others is our code on the 401. Love and tolerance of others is our code on the 407. The jerks with the transponders? We don't have those types of roads. It's just fun when I know things. Love and tolerance of others is our code wherever we go. That is our code. That is what we're called to do. Now, these are step 10 promises. And so these are what we experience. And I want to point out, these are promises. This is not a maybe. This is not a mythical thing. These are realities for us if we do this work and have this experience. And this is my experience. This is where I live today. I live here in the Step 10 promises, contingent upon the actions that I take today. It says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. You can make a note if you're writing in your book or the Vision for You books. I am so sorry to the Vision for You people. We're just marking up your books. See page 24. See, on page 24, when we're talking about step one, I can't see that that stove is hot. And I can't stop myself from touching it. This time will be different. Nobody will ever know. You don't know what I went through. I'll just go out for three drinks. And off I go. My problem was hard liquor, but I can drink beer like a lady. I've never done anything in my life like a lady. You know what I mean? This time will be different. But at page 84, I have been restored to sanity. The obsession has been removed. I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I don't need to touch it. I know it's hot. That is the power that's on offer in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says we react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. Automatically. See, I'm not fighting alcohol. I'm not swearing off alcohol. I'm not avoiding temptation with alcohol. The gift has been given to me. It says we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Now, we're going to bounce around. We're not going to go to step three right now. That's a little too all over the place. But in step three, when it talks about making a decision, it's simply a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. Whenever I see that word care, see, it's step three. I don't know if my will and my life will be cared for. But when I go through this book, and this book is riddled with promises, it's riddled with promises like I'm riddled with defects. They're all over the place. You know what I'm saying? Anytime I read a promise, and deeper than that, anytime I experience a promise that is on offer, I experience that. That becomes infutable evidence of God's care in my life. This, in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, that is evidence of God's care for a drunk like me. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. And if you're here today and that is not your experience today, if you're white-knuckling it, if you're in pain, if you're in suffering, what I want you to know, and I say this a lot because I mean it with everything that is in me, it does not take long to get well. It does not take long to go from a place of hopelessness to that hope. It does not take long to get to a place of being a recovered alcoholic, safe and protected, in a position of neutrality. It does not take long. That is our experience. Now, keep in mind, all these promises have some fine print. You know, like things in life, we got the fine print on the contract, the fine print. And it says that is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. That is my experience. If I am at step 10, actively working step 10 and trying to keep in fit spiritual condition, which means action. That is the hope that's on offer. And that is the solution that we're looking for. We're looking for that spiritual awakening, and the removal of the mental obsession is one of those symptoms. Now let's go way back to step one. Let's pop over to the doctor's opinion. We're going to go to page XXVIII. Oh, that's where I started on Thursday. Sorry, just remembering things. So Roman numeral 28, if you're having an easier time finding Roman numerals with other numbers, I don't know why you would, but just in case, Roman numeral 28, XXVIII. Mm-hmm. Aye. What we're going to have a look at is what's known as the cycle of alcoholism. And if you have your little handout, it's the green one. It's a little green one. It's easy to find because it's green. I don't know. And so what we're going to look at is the very bottom paragraph of XXVIII. And it says, men and women drink. And if you're writing in your book or other people's books today, cross out men and women and write alcoholics. Because it is not men and women who drink, it is alcoholics who drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And as an alcoholic, what effect am I after? It's, you got it. I'm after that ease and comfort. I'm after that solution for life. That is what I'm after as an alcoholic. It says the sensation is so elusive, that feeling, that relief, that release, that, I can finally fit and be okay in my own skin. That is so elusive, elusive meaning just out of grasp. That while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after time differentiate the true from the false. What is true for me as an alcoholic is that when I drink, I cannot control the amount that I take, and I burn my life to the ground. And what is false is nobody will know. My problem was tequila. You know, it'll be fine. No, I'll get it back together on Monday, you know? That is the false. And so as an alcoholic, and if you're writing in your book, you can make a little note that that is the mental obsession. And that's what we're talking about. When I am as sober as I am today and my alcoholism is untreated, I get a thought to do the most insane thing I could ever do, and that is take that first drink. And I forget the consequences, and I don't see what's going to happen. And it says to them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. See, I got here and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I hoped it wasn't alcoholism. It says they're restless, irritable, discontent. Now, if you ask anyone who comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, hey, what is your problem? What I would answer is I would tell you, alcohol, are you stupid? It's Alcoholics Anonymous. That is what it says. My problem is alcohol. But if you sit any alcoholic down and you ask, when do you feel restless, irritable, discontent? It's when I'm sober. When I'm sober. And I want you to know this part of the book was written by Dr. Silkworth. And he's a medical doctor. He's not an alcoholic. He gave us knowledge of what our problem is. That problem being lack of control and lack of choice. He was able, the physical allergy, the mental obsession. So that is a doctor describing what we look like on the outside, restless, irritable, discontent. Oh, the patient today appears to be a little bit restless, irritable, discontent. I don't know about you, but what's happening on my insides? What's happening for me is that emptiness, that loneliness in the depth of my soul, that agony, that ache that nothing can fill. It's that anxiety like somebody's stabbing my shoulder blades, that depression that's so bad that I can't get out of bed. It's like I'm a raw, exposed nerve ending, and for some ungodly reason, the wind is blowing. My skin doesn't fit, and I don't want to be here anymore, and I can't do it another day. And again, if you ask me how I'm doing, I'll say, happy to be here, happy to be sober. I love sobriety, right? Because I don't know any different. And see, keep in mind, we're talking about the spiritual malady. You can make a little note that that is the spiritual malady. The spiritual malady is just a sense of being separated from a power greater than yourself, a sense of separateness from God. That's what that is. And if you told me that when I was new, I'd be like, lame. So if you're thinking, lame, fair enough, I'd judge me too. But the spiritual malady is not limited to alcoholics. Non-alcoholics experience that spiritual malady. It's for some people, part of their human condition. But what that does is that drives that mental obsession. Because they're restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So that fuels that insane thought to take that drink. And it says drinks which they see others taking with impunity. Those are those normal jerks who go out for a drink or two, and then stop. You know, I was saying this on Thursday. Those are those normal jerks who'll be like, honey, sweetie, I'm gonna go out for 3 drinks. I'll be home by 9. And you know what happens? Oh, thank you. They go out, yeah, I was getting time. I wasn't getting a long distance high five. That's what that was. They go out for 3 drinks and they're home by 9 and their pants are dry and they have both their shoes. And then it's their house with the person that they're supposed to be with. You know what I mean? Like, I do not relate, right? So that's what it means to drink with impunity. They drink and nothing happens to them, nothing happens for them. And it says after they have succumbed to the desire again, that means take that first drink, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops. They pass through the well-known stages of a spree. So that phenomenon of craving is that physical allergy, that thing inside of me that once I start to drink, I need more. And the more that I drink, the more I have to drink. And I go off on the spree. And a spree is any length of time that I'm drinking. It can be years. It can be weeks. It can be months. It can be a single day and evening. And it says, emerging remorseful, I come too filled with remorse and regret. I come too filled with guilt and shame. I come too with a sense of self-hatred. And that fuels me to say, that's it. That firm resolution not to drink again. I don't know if anyone here has ever sworn off. That's it. We did a show of hands. I'm never going to drink again. And that has no effect. See, I say, that's it. I'm never going to drink again. And what happens to me is I'm thrust into sobriety. I'm thrust into abstinence. I'm thrust into that restless, irritable discontent. And given enough time, I get a thought, and that thought tells me this time will be different. You can take a drink. And I take that drink, and the allergy kicks in, and off I go on my spree, and I come to emerging remorseful, filled with guilt and shame and remorse, and I say, that's it, I'm never going to drink again, but that has no effect. I get thrust into sobriety. And see, the more times I go around that cycle, the worse that pain gets, that spiritual malady, and the louder that mental obsession gets. And I'm going, it's going quicker, it's going quicker. Right? And it says, this is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, the word psychic is Greek in origin. It refers to mind and soul. And so what I need is a change of my mind and a change of my soul. I need a spiritual awakening. That is our solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. It says there's very little hope of his recovery. So if I can mirror my experience with that of the cycle, if I can come up with times in my life where I said, that's it, I'm never going to drink again. And where I had that thought that said, you know what, nobody will know. And off I go. If I can mirror my experience with that of the cycle, it is a cycle. It is repeated over and over and over. I can understand the hopelessness of my alcoholic's dilemma. See, it's not a matter of if I drink again, if I am an alcoholic. It is a matter of when I drink again. I won't take us to page 37 because we still got some stuff on XXIX and it's too much to bounce around like that. But on page 37, it talks about how in my mind I have two thoughts that are running a race. And one thought is the thought that I cannot drink. I do not want to do this again. And the other is the thought that nobody will ever know. This time will be different. And given enough time, the insane thought will always win. And I had a step one experience. And my step one experience was I will drink again. I will, unless I have a spiritual awakening. That psychic change. And it says, now this is the paragraph of hope. It says, on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change, a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed is just a fancy way to say hopeless. Hopeless. Who had so many problems, he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. Those step 10 promises. The mental obsession is removed. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. The 12 steps. Because we don't like rules. They're not rules. They're spiritual actions. I take the actions. So when I understand what Alcoholics Anonymous is, I have a problem that is twofold. And it does open up till threefold in the later steps. But if I understand my problem being a physical allergy and a mental obsession, and I understand what my solution is. It's a spiritual awakening, getting connected with a power greater than myself. And I understand that my program of action is the 12 steps to get me from that place of hopelessness to that place of hope. I know what I need to do here. I need to sit down with somebody who can help me have that experience. That's what I need to do. I know I'm going to go a minute over. That might be a lie. I might go a minute or two over. Let's go to the bottom of page 24 because I just want to tie this together. But I know, but I should have told you to put a bookmark in. We got a lot of things you could use at bookmarks, a lot of paper, a lot of stickers. So bottom of 24, when this sort of thinking, that's the mental obsession, is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, that's the physical allergy. He has probably placed himself beyond human aid. That's me. And unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. That's me today. That's me in 2023. That's me. I am beyond human power. I am beyond human aid. I did not try everything that there is to get and stay sober, but everything that I tried failed. I could not stay sober, not suicidal at the same time. Let's pop over to the bottom of page 25. If you are seriously alcoholic as we were, it turns out I am. I have a lack of control and a lack of choice. I have an allergy that takes me once I start to drink and an obsession that compels me to take that first. We believe there is no middle of the road solution. I was hoping there was. I was hoping there was an option C. It says we were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, that's me. That's what we're talking about, page 24. I am beyond human power and beyond human aid. We had two alternatives. One was to go into the bitter ends, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. And the other, to accept spiritual help. And when I understand the hopelessness of my dilemma, I'm willing to accept the hope that is on offer. And that's a minute late, so we'll wrap up there. Thank you.